All right, we're continuing in our study of the covenant applied, and title of this talk is going to be The Household Focus. Last time we looked at the sign of the covenant in the Old Testament and the New Covenant, and we saw that the meanings of these two different signs were exactly the same. So both circumcision and baptism testify to entering into covenantal relationship with the Lord, and they both testify to our need to be cleansed from our pollution. And we looked at the verses that showed these exact parallels between these two signs and what they mean. That's an important aspect of debate which somehow is greatly overlooked when you're talking to someone of the Baptist persuasion. We also saw that God, from the very beginning, established his covenant with the whole family unit. And this was never changed in the New Testament, which means God still relates covenantally to the family unit. That is, he brings the whole family into the visible covenant and relationship that he has. And this is, the whole family unit is brought in through the faith of the covenantal head. You see, the idea of placing the covenant sign upon an infant is thoroughly biblical. So we looked at, it's thoroughly biblical. And so we mustn't apologize for that. We see it through 4,000 years of the Old Testament. This was the biblical position, to put the sign on the infants. And when God's focus turned from the nation of Israel to the whole world, the sign of the covenant was changed, but the purpose of the sign remained the same. So this is the covenant, this is what it's about. And so now the focus here is we're dealing with the covenant household, because that's how God functions, with this covenantal unit. So every time there's a baptism, we ought to be challenged by what it means for us and our households. What is going on here? Are we going through a ritual? What is the message that is being proclaimed to us? The sovereignty of God chose Abraham. That's what it did. The sovereign hand came down, pulled Abraham out of his nation, and brought him to himself. And he brought at the same time Abraham's family into a covenantal relationship with the Almighty. Abraham was then bound by the terms of that covenant and expected by the Lord to do the whole of God's will. That was it. So this is the sovereign act of God. I want you, Abraham. You're mine. We're in covenant now. There's no debate from Abraham's point as to, well, can we negotiate the terms of that? Can we negotiate what's required? It's just a sovereign act, and with that sovereign act of God's mercy and grace comes the covenantal responsibilities that were placed upon Abraham. So God said, do this, don't do that. Follow me here, don't go there. This is how you're going to live, this is how you're not going to live. And on and on. That's God laid it all out for him. This is what it would look like. So every time there's a baptism, we have the same image etched on our minds again. And it calls us to reflect upon the fact that we too have been called into the same covenantal union that Abraham was called into. You are in covenant with me, God is saying. And therefore you are accountable to the terms and the stipulations of this covenant in your household. Your household is my household. It's my covenantal unit. And so the Lord has these same expectations on us as he placed upon Abraham. When he called Abraham into that covenant and he said, now, this is how you to live, the same is with us. One of the most fundamental covenantal responsibilities is education. There's no escaping from it. That's absolutely central to the whole idea of covenant and the whole objective that God has in mind. The head of the household is bound by the fact that he has been called by God into the kingdom to then educate his household with respect to God's ways. That's a fundamental responsibility of the covenant. You will educate them in this way. Genesis 17 shows us is where God gave the sign of the covenant to Abraham. And then in chapter 18, God explained why he chose Abraham. In chapter 18, verse 19, he explained, this is why I chose you, Abraham. God says, I knew you. I have known him, known in the sense of intimacy, known in the sense of coming in this intimate relationship and union with him. I have known you, entered into this close relationship with you, in order that he may command his children and his household after him, and that they may keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, and that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. That's why he has known Abraham. That's why he brings us into covenantal relationship with him. And it is that responsibility that as soon as we're in covenantal relationship with God, the whole covenant household's in relationship, and the primary focus and responsibility is to train this household in the Lord's ways, that he will train his children and his household in all these things, in the ways of the Lord to do righteousness and justice. God became intimately related unto that end I have known him, in order that he may command his household. And what is the objective that the head of the household is trying to reach by this instruction? That those in his household keep the ways of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice. That's the goal. That's the fundamental goal. Moses repeatedly exhorted fathers in Deuteronomy to teach the children all of God's commands. In Deuteronomy 4, verses 9 and 10. In Deuteronomy 6 and verse 7. In Deuteronomy 11 and 19. And in chapter 32 and verse 46. Moses is repeatedly exhorting parents to train their children in these ways. And in two of those verses that I gave, he explains how comprehensive and unceasing this instruction is to be. You shall teach them diligently to your children. This is all God's commands. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. That's Deuteronomy 6, 7. And then again, he says in Deuteronomy 11, 19, you shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Moses is anxious to communicate the kind of instruction that is to be given. In these two passages, Moses says that this law is to govern the home and the whole of society. If you read those verses, more verses in chapter 6 and chapter 11, it's to govern the home, put them on the doorposts and on your gates, the whole of society. This is what you're going to be teaching to your children constantly. And when you sit in your home, when you walk by the way, when you lie down or when you rise up. And for what reason? Verse 21 tells us of Deuteronomy 11. That your days might be multiplied and the days of your children. You might have long life on the earth. When our children grow up not having a detailed understanding of the whole of God's law, society comes under the judgment of God. That's reality. When they don't understand the law of God. Thus Moses' great emphasis in Deuteronomy upon the need to diligently instruct one's children, and in fact, that's why he was giving it. In fact, one of the last things Moses says is this point. He has this long speech to Israel. He makes a statement, and then he gives the final kind of blessing upon them, and then he dies. That's how it worked. But the last this kind of statement he gives, he addresses in between those two kind of addresses. He says, "Set your hearts on all the words which I testify among you today, which you shall command to your children, and be careful to observe." All the words of this law. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 46. So Moses is repeating this throughout Deuteronomy. And this is the last thing that's on his heart. Guys, this is so fundamentally important. That this whole of God's law word is communicated. Is taught to your children. The psalmist reminds us of God's command in Deuteronomy 4 and 6. When he says in Psalm 78 verses 5 through 8. He's just reminding what Moses had talked about. And he's saying, "For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel that he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born, that they may arise and declare them to their children, that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments and may not be like their fathers, a stubborn and a rebellious generation that did not set its heart aright, and whose spirit was not faithful to God." So this is the commandment that God has set in Israel. And he's referring back to what Moses had shared in Deuteronomy 6 and other places. In Deuteronomy 4. This is the command. This is the command that God has set in the nation. A faithful generation is one that has long meditated upon the law of God. And is able to apply it to all areas of life. That is what the covenant head of the home's goal should be. That's my goal. That's my objective. That's my fundamental responsibility, is that my household and my children understand the whole of God's law. When Moses died, Joshua landed with the responsibility to lead the nation of Israel. And thus God said to him at the beginning of Joshua, in chapter 1, in verses 7 and 8, "Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success." Clearly, success depends on a grasp and an understanding of the whole of God's law, how it applies to life, how it directs us, what is to be done in every circumstance that comes across our path. And success depended upon Joshua having a thorough grasp of the law and not deviating from it in any of his dealings. But what we read here further explains what Moses meant by diligently teaching our children. Joshua is saying, God says, Joshua, you've got to meditate on this constantly. This is something that's got to be part of you. It's got to be in you. And that's what Moses meant when he's talking about how you do this, when you sit down, when you rise up, when you go in the way, when you're constantly instructing your children in this way. This is what the covenant faithfulness looks like. Becoming competent in handing the law is not a once-off Saturday afternoon project. Well, maybe we could fit that in on the 22nd of July and that'll get the law done, tick that off, and move on to other things. This is a constant responsibility. Moses, the one who brought the law to the nation, understood what was needed to become proficient in the law. He, of all people, would have understood, what does it mean to be able to wrestle with these things, these truths, and understand them and apply them to the many different situations as he was judging this nation and passing judgment over the day-to-day activities and lives of the people. In Psalm 1, which is the introduction to the whole book of Psalms, what is the purpose of Psalms? Well, Psalm 1 and Psalm 2, actually, but Psalm 1 gives you the introduction to that. This is the objective. This is why the book of Psalm exists. Psalm 1 explains it. And it says to the righteous person, this is not how you're supposed to walk. Stay away. Stay away from the wicked. Stay away from those who speak perverse things. And so the person who is not taken captive by these ideas of the world, which is how Psalm 1 begins off, the reason he's not taken captive is because he delights in the law of the Lord. And in his law he doth meditate day and night. That's his security, that's his protection against these deceptive ways and ideas. And then, because he meditates in the law day and night, the psalm ends off, whatsoever he does shall prosper. See this connection. What Moses is commanded, what Abraham was commanded to do to his household, how every command that comes to us with respect to the law, how important it is, how central it is to our living. We're not talking, I suppose I have to every time remind you, we're not talking here about how we are justified in God's sight. Justification is by grace through faith. But we are called to serve and we have responsibilities when we come into the kingdom and we are in God's covenant family. And one of the fundamental responsibilities is to teach our household the whole of the law of God. So when a father sees the sign of the covenant being applied to his child in water baptism, this is what he is committing to and being reminded of. Okay, this is what I'm doing. This is my responsibility. This child has to be thoroughly taught and grounded and equipped in being able to handle the law of God. The covenant means thoroughly instructing your children in the whole of God's law word. There's no escaping from that. And when we're part of a baptism service and we see that sign being placed, once again, we need to be reminded ourselves as to what our responsibilities are. The covenant is not atomistic. It doesn't focus only upon the individual, but ultimately upon the whole of life. Now, the family is the most basic unit in society. But fathers turning their hearts to their children is ultimately so that God doesn't come and smite the earth with a curse, as we read in Malachi 4 and verse 6. The reason I want you to turn your hearts to your children is so that I don't come and smite the earth with a curse. When the most fundamental covenantal responsibility is neglected, that is when fathers do not train their children in the whole of God's law word, society disintegrates under God's judgment. Fathers turning their hearts to their children is not merely an emotional thing. It doesn't mean that the father and his household now indulge themselves in family self-serving activities. Well, this is what it is now. You know, we're together. We're just together. And this is what we do, everything together. And, you know, we're going to have fun. We're going to do this and that and all the next fun activity we're going to go to. That's not what it's about. The most fundamental responsibility is to instruct their hearts. And the father turning his heart to his children is to instruct them in the whole of God's law word. So fundamental to him turning his heart to his children is the covenantal responsibility to make his children and his household proficient in handling the law of God. In Deuteronomy, God said, it's Deuteronomy 28, verses 1 and 2, "Now it shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully his commandments, which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, because you obey the voice of the Lord your God." And then Deuteronomy goes on to explain the blessings that will come upon us and the curses that would come upon us when we don't obey the law of God. And we see that those blessings and those cursings touch every area of life. It's not just limited to some spiritual narrow area. It touches everything. It touches the crops. It touches our nation. It touches politics. It touches foreign relations. It touches every aspect of our existence. And the preamble here sets it up and says, this is how you're going to prosper in all these areas. This is how you're going to be blessed in all these areas when you do them and function in them according to the law word, the word that I have given and revealed. The way God's curses or blessings come upon people are often natural consequences of lawless actions. It's very natural. You know, sometimes we kind of think God's judgment or even God's blessing, it kind of comes out of the blue. But it comes out of, for example, His blessing upon us. Sometimes, whether it's economically or whatever, comes out of faithfulness and faithfully doing with your might what your hand finds to do. And somebody recognizes that, and suddenly you're given whatever. That's an arbitrary illustration. You're brought to a position of influence or authority, as Joseph is a great example of that. But as he did with his might what his hand found to do, he was exalted and brought to a position of prominence and influence. But the blessings and curses are more natural than just coming out of the blue. So when individuals and nations reject the law word of God with respect to jurisdictions, the curse will be conflict. When we violate God's law with respect to economics, the curse that comes will be connected to the economic realm and traceable to our lawless actions in the economic realm. And so when we step beyond our jurisdictions as a nation, you make enemies. You're stepping and you're interfering with other people. And so the consequences bring conflict upon yourself. And you say, okay, now I'm reaping something. And God's judgment is upon you for the rebellion and the lawlessness in the way you acted. And so ignorance about the law or rebellion against the law brings adverse consequences. And thus central to the working of God's kingdom are covenant heads thoroughly equipping their households in the whole of God's law word. Until that is grasped by the church, until that is grasped in our society, we're not going to pull ourselves out of the decline and the spiral that we're in until we realize, yes, it is God's law word, that we live by every word from His mouth. This is what's supposed to be taking place in covenant households, firmly grounding the children in the whole of God's revelation. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge, Proverbs tells us in chapter 1, verse 7, and in chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Core to real education is knowing the Lord and His law word. And with respect to children in the covenant household, Proverbs says, for the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. They don't want to be instructed. They don't want to receive the instruction of the law. They are to receive the wisdom that comes from instruction. That's what being wise entails. Evidence of fearing the Lord is receiving instruction with respect to His righteousness and justice. That's what it looks like. Do you fear the Lord? Yeah, I do. Okay. Well, how do you receive the instruction of His law? How do you receive the instruction that is given to you and brought to you? And now with respect to the head of the household, Proverbs 15 and verse 33 says, the fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom. That's interesting. And some commentators just kind of wrap that up with the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and that's how you get wisdom. But this is the fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom. When the covenant head fears the Lord, he manifests this by the content of his instruction. That's how he manifests his fear. It is made up of God's wisdom. That's what his instruction is made up of, and that's what he instructs in. He instructs God's righteousness. He instructs his household of God's comprehensive law word. To fear the Lord is to walk in his ways, and as the book of Ecclesiastes explains, at the end of Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13, here you've got the wisdom of Solomon, and he's been through, to believe he wrote it, and he's been through all these issues of life and debated and looked at and scrutinized and tried everything. And when he ends off, he says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. Or as the King James puts it, this is the whole duty of man. Fear God, keep His commandments. And that's fundamentally what fearing means. To fear God is to give instruction. It is the instruction of wisdom. When we fear God as heads of households and as young men preparing to be heads of households, to be able to and equip yourself to be able to instruct in wisdom is a fundamental aspect of being prepared. Thus, to fear the Lord in the context of the household means receiving instruction. And that shows you how to walk in God's ways. You receive that kind of instruction, and it also means imparting instruction to those under one's care about how they are to walk in God's ways. The fear of the Lord is not an emotion, but a zealous activity of learning and teaching, receiving and imparting the whole counsel of God. the psalmist asks the Lord, how can a young man cleanse his way? How can I know what is pure in any area? And then his answer is, by taking heed according to your word. Psalm 119, verse 9. How can a young man know what's pure? By taking heed according to the word. Proverbs 15:31 says, the ear that hears the rebukes of life will abide among the wise, or in the midst of the wise. He who can hear the rebukes of life, who can hear the truth being communicated, that can hear correction being brought when they're not in line with the law of God, they will abide amongst the wise. When he hears this reproofs of life, that is life actually. It's the way of life, and he will abide amongst the wise, which is another way of saying that he will live long on the earth and be effective in advancing the kingdom of God. He will live long on the earth. The covenant is about dominion. It's about filling the earth with godly seed who know and fear the Lord. And at the very core of this grand plan of subduing the earth and discipling the nations for Christ is the family unit, the household. Thus, when we hear covenant household, we are to be reminded about the responsibilities given to the household members to know the Lord God and to understand his comprehensive law word. This is dominion through instruction and obedience. That's what dominion is about, instruction and obedience. The head of the household should feel the weight of the responsibility placed upon him to ground his children in the whole of God's law word. That's what's important in God's scheme of things. And thus it ought to be important to us. So, I mean, practically, what does that look like? Where you find yourself now, what does that look like? I can open that up as a question. What does that look like practically to instruct my household? Well, I suppose, first of all, it requires us understanding what that is personally. And when we kind of first generation coming to this understanding, we might not be necessarily first generation Christian, but definitely there are many times we might be first generation understanding of the applicability of the whole of God's law word. So sometimes as well, there's catch up to do. There's a lot of study and understanding to have to get to grips with that, while at the same time instructing and teaching and trying to communicate this comprehensive understanding to your family. Because we need to get up to speed, as well as training others. But there's much material is available. Much material is available. Fundamentally, probably one of the key important things would be being in a good church where you're being instructed and taught, where you're getting teaching and instruction. But there's also many books, audios, much good material out there that we need to be washing ourselves with, laying that foundation where we can be thoroughly equipped and prepared for this work. But vital to doing that, we need to see the importance and the significance that God places upon it. And I hope that has come out as we've just followed this thread through the scriptures to say, well, if I'm a covenant member, what does that mean? I'm in the covenant. So what does that mean from a responsibility perspective with my household? Well, this is the central core issue that it means to be in a covenant and to be in the Lord's covenant household. That's a good point. Don't wait till you know everything before you start to do something, and you've got to start acting and moving in this point. So even if you are ill-equipped, and guys listening to this on tape, I'm sure there will be guys who it might even be a new idea to, but you've got to start. You've got to start training your family. You've got to do it. And so sometimes it's hand-to-mouth. As you learning something, you're teaching that straight away. And so to understand how important this is to help us motivate. And it should not be intimidating as opposed to encouraging, to realize, okay, now, I'm not going to be distracted. I can use this as a foundation to say, okay, I know where my focus must be. I know what I need to be pointed at. And I can start moving down that path and in that direction. Because as Ecclesiastes says, the end of the whole matter is to fear God and keep his commandments. And in order to do that, we've got to know his commandments. We've got to know how the law applies to all of life. And then that can guide us and instruct us and help us to stay on track with our covenantal responsibilities. That verse, we don't have to know a whole amount. The whole of the matter is to fear God and keep his commandments. And we've seen that to fear God is to love instruction, and it's to give instruction. That's what fearing God looks like in the covenant context. And so we start moving down that path. We start equipping ourselves, and we start teaching. As whatever level we're at, we start teaching at that level and communicating this truth. And may we constantly cry out to the Lord for the grace to be found faithfully doing what he has given us to do. It's only with his grace that we're going to be able to do this. But this is what we are called to do, and that is what the focus of the covenant is. So are there any other comments or questions? Yeah, the Bible is to be our primary source of devotions with the family. But you can add different books to that. But that family devotion is a vital part of the equipping and preparing. And the busyness of life can squeeze that out.
Do they understand it or not?
Yeah, it applies. This is the covenant. This is what that's what baptism means.
So even if you haven't been baptized, you're still part of the covenant.
You're still in the covenant, right? You're still there. You have to consider when Moses refused to circumcise his children. We're not told the exact reason. Reading between the lines, you kind of get the impression that maybe his wife was opposed to the ritual, felt it cruel or something. By the way, she responds after she circumcised the son. But you see that at that point, God's anger was against Moses for his neglect of applying the sign to his child. Mm-hmm. So, you see, the fact is that when a covenant parent, when that child is conceived, that child is part of the covenant community of God, part of the visible thing. Now, the application of the sign is an act of obedience, because this is what God requires with respect to marking and setting apart his people. Mm-hmm. So it's a step. So, you know, in a sense, to put that in balance, the disobedience in the believer is in many areas. And so, you know, the baptism is one area, I believe, but there's lots of areas where believers are becoming more consistent in their understanding and their application. And you know, and it's a big hurdle in many cases to work through that when that's what you were brought up in, and that's what so much of the church is proclaiming, and your whole thinking has been washed and washed and washed in that mindset. It's not easy to change. Mm-hmm. But I hope that if you sit down and look at what we've covered particularly last time and this time, and just see the parallels, that it's inescapable. It really is. The covenant sign and the continuity and flow of what God has done. All right, well, why don't we pray?